Okay, I'm going to talk about some fuzzy stuff. That was extremely technical and lots of computers, and boy, that's really good way of overcoming some of the difficulties you have with war games. Don't call it a war game, go out into theatre and do stuff. That's great. I'm going to go completely the opposite direction. This is what I'm going to talk about. This is about me. I'll move on because we'll get on to the stuff we're talking about. What are we talking about? These are some marvellous acronyms. Effects-based operations being the normal one. But it's also about training morale, efficiency, cohesion, and all that fuzzy stuff. What we're really talking about is an area that lacks predictable outcomes. Hostages is a very good example. If we're talking about the Middle Ages, taking hostages was clearly understood and would probably, most of the time, have a predictable outcome. You could rely, you've taken the hostages, they're not going to stab you in the back, everything will be fine. Taking hostages in World War II, when you're the Germans, in northern France, didn't always work out the same way. So we have the same event and we have two different outcomes depending on the context. This is very important. Also, when we're modelling these, in the majority of cases, there is a presumption of rational behaviour. We go into the town, we provide medical support, and they'll be nice to us. Whenever anyone comes out with that, I point to General Buck Napier. Look him up on Wikipedia if you don't know anything about him, in Liberia. His chief tactic was to kill a small child and drink his blood, get himself worked up, take all his clothes, and attack the nearest town with a machete. Naked. Hacking people to death for the fun of it. He killed thousands of people and had a number of followers, many of whom, after a particularly notorious raid on a wedding dress shop, used to attack the local towns dressed in wedding dresses. Particularly horrific person. He is now an evangelist preacher, going around preaching love and reconciliation, and doing quite a good job. When people talk to me about computer-generated, semi-automated forces, I always say, give me a General Butt Naked SAF and we'll talk. The other thing we're talking about is an area where numerical quantification is difficult. And my example of that, which I particularly like, is the AT-11 sniper missile. Now, according to operational analysis, the AT-11 missile has a 20% kill probability against Challenger frontal armor at 4 kilometers. It's a really good tandem warhead missile, and the T-72 is equipped with it, and the Iraqis had it. So given that number that we can grab hold of and enjoy, why did we have no casualties from the AT-11 missile? Well, the answer's obvious, because the guys who were firing them were shit. Quantifying shit is a bit tricky. And that's basically where we are. We're in a space where the language itself is just very difficult. To the extent when General Mattis said, don't use effect-based operation. You're not allowed to use it anymore. Commander's guidance in 2008. Now, he might have said that, but when you look at the doctrinal guidance that was issued the following year, there are 164 occasions where the word effects-based operations are used within the doctrinal guidance following the order not to use the term. So we're in an interesting space. So how do we model effects? Well, one of the ways is to come up with a list of factors and apply bonuses for certain factors and penalties for others. Now, the famous one amongst some of the wargaming fraternity is Flaming Pete. Okay? You have to go back in time to 266 AD to a Greek city-state that was being besieged by General Antigonius, who had an army full of elephants. And the occupants of the city smeared pitch over their pigs, set light to them and pointed them at the elephants. So screaming pigs on fire, hurtling in the general direction, caused a massive stampede of the elephants, killing half the invading army, and a fabulous victory was achieved. But again, the context is quite important. It's the sort of thing you can probably only do once. Bringing it a little bit more up to date with the dancing pigs, if you are attempting to send a virus into a headquarters, the famous test on whether people will open the email is to describe what's in it. I have attached a video of dancing pigs. There's a chance that it might compromise the security of a computer, but it is dancing pigs. This leads to the famous security quote that, given a choice between security and dancing pigs, the user will choose dancing pigs every time. We then have a really big list of factors in the peace support operations model. That's a better way of doing it. Or you can also have a simpler way. You put a human in the loop and you use your normal simulation, but you apply overlays and triggers within the simulation to attract attention to things that might have an influence effect. For example, a conventional constructive simulation that you're using, you highlight all of those elements in the terrain database that have a humanitarian effect, like churches, mosques, schools, and every time that there are artillery impacts, every time there are units firing, crossing those areas, it's brought to the attention of the effects guy in the headquarters. And he can apply manually whatever changes you want. It's a sort of assistance to the guy who's trying to do the fluffy stuff in your constructive simulation. So those are some of the ways that people have a go at doing it. Very often, however, the effect is considered from one side only. I go into the village, I provide medical supply, I heal all their children, and they're going to be nice to me. And very often, the way in which those equations and those numbers work is hidden behind a black box, or in the peace support operation model, a really big, sexy black box. So I want to take a little diversion and talk about prediction and role play. There's been quite a lot of research done recently that shows that when you're trying to predict outcomes in conflict situations, role playing is more accurate than any other way of doing it. Now, if you want more information on that, we can provide the information, but here's a little chart that summarizes it. So basically, the tallest number in every case is role play. We've got game theory and unaided judgment, and then we've got chance. So if you look at those two, and the dart throwing monkeys we were talking about, in the artist protest, of course, dart throwing monkeys, unaided judgment, and random chance, the artists are a bit of a funny bunch. But role play will give you the best result in every case. And what I want to talk about is a way of approaching the fuzzy stuff in a very simple manner. We just describe it. We give reasons why it ought to work, so everybody hears the reasons. We assess whether those reasons are good or bad, and then we come to a judgment.
X is as simple as that. Except, but,
we do need a structure.
We have to be able to bound it, and we have to do it in a way that doesn't have 25 of us sitting around the table arguing and not getting it. Because we're trying to generate a result, we're trying to get some analysis. We want transparency. If we're going to use this method, everybody has to understand it. They have to use the same language, they have to describe things in a certain way, and we have to be able to be clear what we're doing. And we have to have adversaries. I've gone into the village, I've inoculated all the children, and the enemy came in immediately afterwards and hacked all those inoculated arms off. The Colonel Kurtz effect. You're not going to have happy, smiley villagers if you go around inoculating their children when they know that's what the adversaries are going to do in return. Without a proper adversarial process, you will end up with that excessive degree of optimism we were talking about earlier. And if we don't have all of those, it's a bunch of guys sitting around a table. Now, in the certain circumstances, that can work fine. I'm just saying that this is another tool that we can use instead. Now, a chap called Chris Engel came up with an idea of providing that. Now, Chris is a great guy, but he's an educator. His wife makes glove puppets, and they've moved on a bit. And we've taken their ideas in a number of places around the world and extended them to make them a bit more useful for a military audience. And the idea is that the players, or player teams, role play their point of view. It's very important. They role play their point of view. They will be given background data or whatever. And the players themselves should distill those three or four pages of briefing notes into pithy one-liners as to their objectives. This serves a couple of purposes. One, make sure they've read the briefing material. But two, having those pithy one-liners focuses them on the problem very, very quickly. But also, when it comes to the AAR, it helps in understanding. And then the players advance their position in the game by a series of arguments. And the arguments are constructed by a player stating an action. I want to punish Assad for using chemical weapons with the desired outcome that he's less likely to use chemical weapons in the future. And I provide reasons why or how I'm going to do that. So, I've just come up with that. Since somebody give me, how am I going to achieve punishing Assad? Okay, right. Well, let's say, for example, I launch some cruise missiles to take out his Scud unit's locations, destroying his Scud. Everybody else then has an opportunity to suggest why blowing up his Scud might not have the desired outcome. Can anyone think of reasons why blowing up Assad Scuds won't necessarily stop him from using chemical weapons? Okay. Okay. Let us assume that more than one of you had that. We would end up with a number of reasons for, well, in this case, and a number of reasons against, lots. And then we would assess that as having a low likelihood of success. Assign a probability, roll the dice, and move the game on. And with practice, with an enthusiastic chap administering it, you can get a very, very quick game that will move on very quickly. And you get the result. Now, this is a war game, it's not a simulation. Most of the time, the results will not be exactly repeatable. We are looking for a narrative rather than an absolute forecast, although role-playing is very accurate at forecasting outcomes. The majority of the value, as was explained yesterday by, in fact, DSDL, the value is in the experience and not necessarily the precise results. So if you're working towards someone who goes, I'm not interested in participating in the game, just give me what the hard sums are, then you're going to have some difficulty. Because the biggest value is the insight, rather than, yep, you're going to get 10 helicopters. Yep, that's the answer, 10 helicopters. It is very effective at exposing assumptions. One of the games we had the chief scientist, we had 10 capabilities that were expressed. And at one stage in the game, we said, okay guys, argue which of the 10 capabilities is the least likely to succeed. And 9 of the teams all argued the same thing, that number 10 was utterly useless and bound to fail. The umpire at the time was the head of capability for unmanned underwater vehicles, and the 10th thing was its chief scientist pet project. It was that light bulb moment where we go, actually, the rest of the day and all the other analysis, just forget it. We've achieved our aim with that one argument. It's been used as a pure matrix game, but it's also been used as a tool to assist in other things. In kinetic games, where we're talking about combat resolution, we've got basic BAM scores, you know, an M1 tank is worth 14 points, a T-72 is worth 10, I've got 5 tanks, he's got 3 tanks. Yes, but what about the tactical factors? Explain why you think you're going to win. Well, I'm attacking at night, so I've got modern night vision equipment, etc., etc. And the other guy then comes up, well, I've got fanatical troops and I'm actually well trained and I do know how to use the AT-11 missile. So it can be used as a sub-tool to a wider game. Delivering soft effects as part of a conventional simulation where, for example, movement and the kinetic effects of firing in a constructive simulation are handled normally. It's also been used to down-select a whole load of options, and Rex very kindly suggested something. Let's come up with an outcome and then get the different participants to suggest the most likely events that led up to that outcome from their point of view. Say, for example, a chemical strike. Get each of the stakeholders to argue how that happened and then examine the most likely way in which it did. Here's some examples, I can talk about them afterwards if you want. We live in a changing world and there's a lot going on. Quite a lot of it is happening at short notice. Libya, we had about a week. That's very difficult to do wargaming in only a week. You're never going to get a computer simulation sorted out. And that's one of the things that made me feel much better was the DSDL project looking at ARCAP. You know, we want to do some analysis, we want to be able to do stuff at short notice. We can't wait 6 months to generate a terrain database, for God's sake. Other stuff happens at quite short notice, and you can generate a game to look at the issues of that in quite a short time. Okay, I did it on Friday night. So the conclusions, one of the best ways, okay, perhaps not the best way, but one of the best ways, of working out what people are likely to do is to use people to model that. And in amongst our tool set, we do need some tools that are simple, transparent, quick, really cheap and effective in generating insights. Okay, thank you.